trust eventually lead into something like a cryptocurrency scam where they try to convince you that you should be investing in cryptocurrencies. Let them help you. So there are other types of scams out there. In a sign of how inventive cyber criminals are in this space, not only are there cryptocurrency scams where they try to convince you to invest in cryptocurrency, there are now fake companies that say they can help you if you've been a victim of a cryptocurrency scam. But that too is a scam. It's very inventive on the part of criminals, so you need to be very careful about these kinds of things. One last thing I'm going to note, criminals use recent events to try to determine how they might be able to best scam you. Recently, there's been a lot in the news about student loan forgiveness, for example. And so you'll see an increase in scams related to student loan forgiveness. So always be wary about current events. That could be an indication of something that someone can use as a scam. What I want to do now is go through a few scenarios with you to see what you've learned from what I've given you. So would you be able to recognize that something is a scam or not? And the very first one I'm going to give you is an email. So imagine that you receive an email. It's from an online subscription service that you do actually have a subscription with. The subject says response required. It then says response required in big red letters. It's almost time for the annual renewal of your online subscription service. However, the credit card we have on file has expired. To prevent a service disruption, please visit our service renewal center at this link and update your credit card information today. Note, if you don't update your credit card information today, we are required to discontinue your service. Turning your service back on will take some time and possibly require a credit check. As always, if you need any help or have any questions, please contact us at this phone number. We're happy to help. Thank you for being a loyal customer. So what are the warning signs if you receive an email like this? First of all, that sense of urgency. I said big red letters, response required. But not just that. If you don't update your credit card information today, we are required to discontinue your service. So there's that sense of fear. You're going to lose that service if you don't update it today. So the urgency and the fear together. It includes a link for payment. And so again, don't trust links that are in emails that have been unsolicited. If you think this might be legitimate, go to the website separately and log in. It's asking for financial information, not directly in here, but that's what will happen when you follow the link. And it seems legitimate because it provides a phone number. So what would happen if you called that? Well, in that case, you would get in touch with the criminal who would then ask for that same financial information. And so that's not an indication that something is legitimate. So that's one for phishing. Let's look at a couple of other examples. This next one is going to be a vishing one. Imagine that you get someone calling you and they say, "Congratulations. You've just won an all-expenses-paid trip to Hawaii. We can't wait to get you and your family scheduled for this once-in-a-lifetime vacation opportunity. Before I transfer you to our scheduling department, I just need you to pay the processing fees using a gift card." So again, what are the warning signs here? I had mentioned before that sometimes with social engineering, instead of fear, they will use a reward. So here's an example of a reward. But if you want to get this reward, you need to actually provide financial information right now. And so again, you still have that sense of urgency in order to respond. The other thing that is a red flag here is they say using a gift card. As I mentioned before, no legitimate business or government agency is going to ask you to pay using gift cards. That is a big red flag. By the way, it's not always that you get asked to pay for something with a gift card. There are other types of gift card scams out there. I have had friends who have received emails that look like it's from their boss saying, "I've got out-of-town visitors coming in. They're doing something for me. I would like to give them a gift card as a token of appreciation, but I don't have time to go do that. Can you please go out and get some gift cards for me and then send me the information?" It looks like it's coming from your boss, but it isn't actually your boss who's sending that. And so you need to be careful here because then, again, if you go and buy the gift cards, thinking you might be reimbursed, and then your boss is like, "I never asked for that." And the email you responded to looked like it might have been your boss, but if you look carefully, it was a similar but not the same email. Another example, this one is a text message that you receive, and it says, "Urgent. An attempt was made to deliver a package today, but no one was home. To reschedule delivery and ensure you receive your package, click this link and complete the form." Again, the sense of urgency. It even starts with the word urgent. And so it wants you to respond right away. It wants you to click the link right away and give that information out. So that's one thing to make sure that you're careful about. These types of scams really took off during the pandemic because everyone was online shopping. Everyone was having things delivered. And so it became a very easy and lucrative scam for criminals to use. Be cautious again because there's a link. If you think it might be legitimate, maybe you are expecting a package and it hasn't arrived yet, go to the shipping company, go to their website, look up their contact information and call them and say, I received this text message from you. Please let me update the shipping information. And they will let you know, yes, it was correct and legitimate, or no, it wasn't. And then you saved yourself from being the victim of a scam. So those are some older examples. Let's go to newer examples. Callback scams are something that are on the rise. So imagine you get a text message. It looks like it's from Bank of America. And it says, verify $271 purchase at Costco on May 16th, 2023. Yes, reply Y. No, call this phone number to request help. Here's your reference number. Or you have a text that just says Bank of and a BA, so it kind of implies Bank of America, even though it's not stating it out front, and then says, verify your account. Card restriction. We have placed a restriction on your ATM debit card. Contact us at this phone number to verify. Send stop to unsubscribe. Now, I have to admit that I think that we in the security community did a really good job of teaching people don't click on links in emails. And I'm hoping that that translated over to don't click on links in text messages. But that means that this, because it doesn't have a link, looks more legitimate. Now you're just being asked to call someone back or to reply through text message. How could that be a scam? Well, it could be. First of all, it might say Bank of America at the top. You cannot trust that. Criminals are able to spoof the number that something is coming from and make it look like it's Bank of America, for example, when it is not. If you call that phone number, you're just going to reach the criminal who is going to then get your financial information because you think you're calling the bank. If you don't call, but you send a text message reply, then again, the criminal might not be able to continue with this specific scam, but they know that you are at that phone number, that you're monitoring it. And so they could try to follow up at a later time with some other scam to see if you might fall victim to that. So these are a couple of different scams that we're seeing that are newer and that people are falling for. There's another type of callback scam, by the way, that's even more pernicious. I'm not sure what the right word is. Imagine that you get a text message like this about verifying a purchase, and it just has you, it doesn't even have you call back. It just says, was this a legitimate purchase, yes or no? And so you say no. Then shortly thereafter, you get a phone call from someone saying, hi, I'm with whatever that financial institution was, and I want to talk to you about the fraud that you've just reported. I saw that you responded that you did not make this purchase, and I would like to make sure that your account is taken care of and that that purchase does not go through. What I need from you first is your username. Please verify like who you are. So you provide your username. They do not ask you for your password. And they might even say, do not give me your password. Remember that you should never give your password to anyone. And so they're trying to get your trust first because there is a text message. They know about that text message. So obviously they're related. They're saying that they're from some organization that you trust and do business with. And now they're even giving you security advice. So they're really trying to get your trust. And what they're going to say is, I need to verify it's you, so I'm going to send you a code. I need you to read the code back to me. And it could be that the code is sent through email, through a text message, through an app. What's actually happening in the background is that the cyber criminal has gone onto your banking site, has entered your username, and clicked on forgot password. When you click forgot password, what a number of different companies will do is then, through some other medium, try to send you a special code to make sure that they can validate it's you. And so now the criminal is saying, oh, give me that code. They type in the code. Now they have the ability to change your password and get access to your bank account. And from there, they can use something like Zelle, which will automatically send money from your bank account to wherever the criminal wants it sent. And so this is a new type of scam. It's, in my opinion, very clever, actually. And so you need to be very careful about it. How do you recognize something like that? I mean, imagine all of the things that got them to build up your trust through this, including giving you security advice. And the thing to remember here is this was unsolicited. If you think that you might have been a victim of fraud and someone then calls you, say, 1 second. What I'm going to do is hang up and I'm going to call the fraud number back. And then you can look on the back of your credit or your debit card. It will have a phone number you can call, or you can go to the website for that financial institution. It will have phone numbers you can call. So call and say, I think that this fraud might have happened. And if it has, then you can deal with it then. And if it hasn't, then first of all, you're letting the bank know that there is this type of attack that was tried against you. And also you saved yourself from being that victim. So that's something to always remember. If you get an unsolicited anything, call, text message, email, be very careful to respond directly to that. Try to go verify through some other means. What we're doing at the bank is we're actually working with university partners right now on trying to protect people against exactly this kind of problem. And so what we've done with our university partners is a survey of over 1,000 people across the United States to try to determine how vulnerable are people to smishing attacks and what demographics are most vulnerable. Traditionally, in the phishing literature, particularly in the phishing, more recent phishing literature, the demographic most vulnerable has tended to be the elderly. The question was, is that also the case for smishing? And it turns out it is not. The most vulnerable demographic we found were college students. And so now we know that that's the demographic that we really need to target for educational material. The other thing that we learned that I thought was really interesting, one of the questions had an example of a scam from a financial institution, from a bank, and a legitimate message from the bank. And what was wonderful is that 78% of people were able to recognize the scam text message as being a scam. That's fantastic. I love that number. I'd love to see it 100%, but right now I will take 78%. Conversely, however, when they were given a legitimate text message from a bank, and banks will reach out to you using text messages, only 23% of respondents identified it as being legitimate. So that's actually a problem on the other side. That means if we as a bank try to reach out to you through text message, you don't recognize it as legitimate, you might not respond to it appropriately, and that could have some follow-on consequences, such as maybe there was an attempted fraud on your account and we were trying to let you know that, or there's some reason that you need to respond to us. And so one of the things we want to do with this research now is determine how is it that we can do things so that consumers can get a text message, recognize that it is legitimate, and do it in such a way that criminals are not able to then spoof that exact same information. And so that's what we're working on now. Another thing that's a new tactic that we're starting to see rising, this is a type of vishing attack. So more traditionally, there were attacks where someone might call you and say, hi, I'm a police officer, or I'm from the hospital, your loved one has been in an accident, and I need you to send money for some reason. That scam has evolved. So it's the case now where a criminal can spoof the phone number. And so it looks like your loved one is calling. On top of that, there are computer programs out there that will allow the criminal to also try to spoof the voice of your loved one. And so now imagine that you're a grandparent, you get a call from your grandchild, it's coming from it looks like it's coming from your grandchild, from their phone number, it's their voice, and they're saying, oh my gosh, I've been in a car accident and I'm at the police station now and they've arrested me and I need to provide so much money for bail. Can you please help me? Please don't tell anyone. I am so embarrassed about this. And I actually know sort of a friend on this one where this has actually happened to them. And they've received that kind of phone call. And they were actually going to provide the money until they did mention it to someone else who convinced them, no, wait, it might be a scam. Note that I used grandparent and grandchild on this particular example. Why did I do that? It turns out that elderly are disproportionately targeted for scams. In particular, in 2022, over 3 billion in losses occurred by people who were age 60 and over. To compare, all of the other ages combined were only a little over 5 billion. That means that people who are age 60 and up for over 30% of the losses from cybercrime last year. And so they will be targeted by scams like this because they're considered as being good targets. And then the other question becomes, how is it that, you know, how did they know what the phone number was for the loved one? How did they get a copy of the voice? Well, a lot of people will post on social media, and it might be pictures of them and their grandkids, and like, so excited, my grandkids came to visit this weekend, and put out their names. Now the criminal can see, all right, here's the relationship, here are the names of the grandchildren, and then go and look up the social media of the grandchildren. From there, they might find their phone number listed. And on top of that, a lot of people will put out videos now. And so they can look for videos that the grandchildren have put out and capture their voice from those. Use those voice samples to then create a spoof of their voice. So we're working again with university partners on this particular type of fraud. And what I want to do is play for you examples of this, because we always hear in the news, oh, with only a few seconds of voice, people can spoof your voice. What does it actually sound like? So I'm going to play a real voice, and then I'm going to play two impersonations. I will point out that the technology used to create these impersonations is over a year old now, so it has improved since then, but it will still give you an idea of what did the voices sound like with only a small number of samples for the first impersonation, and then with a larger number of samples for the second. So here's the real voice.
Everyone went to his own house.
So that was taken from a recording of an audiobook. We took a number of samples from that audiobook and created an impersonation.
This is a Pecosing 1,000 samples.
So it sounds very, well, fake, right? It's raspy. It's kind of robotic sounding. It sounds a bit like a computer. But imagine we have a few more voice samples. It starts to smooth out.
This is a Pecosing 3,000 samples.
And so it starts to sound more realistic. And so if someone has put out a lot of information, a lot of videos, for example, on social media, then there's a lot of samples that could be used by a criminal in order to create that fake voice. Now, you might say, all right, that still sounds really fake to me. But I want to point out that you know, listening to this, to expect that this is going to be a fake voice. And so you're listening for it to be fake. Now, imagine that you get a phone call. It looks like it's coming from your loved one. So you're already predisposed to believing that. And it sounds kind of like their voice. Why would you ever stop to think that it might not be their voice? On top of that, there is the social engineering aspect of it. They are in trouble and they're asking you for help. And of course, you want to help them. There's that sense of urgency. They need your help right away. On top of that, this is over a phone. The quality of calls that we receive on phones, your voice always sounds a little bit different to begin with. Now, if it happens to be a poor connection, we're accustomed to hearing things like chirps or dropouts or static or digitization. And so we're not too surprised when the voice doesn't sound quite right. On top of that, a criminal might put in background noise as well. And so it's even more difficult to hear the voice, but it still sounds kind of like your loved one. And again, why would you ever think it wasn't? And so one thing that people should think about if they're in this situation, and I admit this will be really, really hard to do in that situation, but take a breath, stop, and say, I am going to hang up and call you right back. Because the person calling you is probably calling on their mobile phone. And so if they are in trouble, if you hang up and call them back, you're going to get them. You are going to have the chance to actually help them. But if it's a scam, you're going to get your loved one who's going to be very confused when you're like, oh my gosh, are you okay? And so this could actually save you from being a victim of this kind of scam. And again, I know in the moment it's going to be very, very hard to do. As I mentioned, this is a very new tactic. There hasn't been a lot of fraud connected to this yet, but we are seeing it happen and we're seeing a growth in this happen. I will mention something else that you can potentially do to try to protect yourself. I have a friend and her daughter is actually a social media influencer. And so she's concerned about someone doing something like this. And so the daughter and mom have set up essentially a code word between them. If there's ever anything happening, here is the code that I will use to let you know that it's really me. And if I don't say this, then you know it's not me. And so that's something else that you could consider doing if you have someone in your life that you think might be potentially a victim of this. So I have given you now a lot of different examples of different types of scams. We've worked through a number of scenarios, including some newer scams. What I want to do is summarize at this point on how it is that you can protect yourself. And the first thing I'm going to talk about are social media tips. And I didn't talk a lot about this in the presentation, but I did note, for example, in that grandchild scam that we just talked about in vishing, that the information could be gathered through social media. So you should always be careful what it is that you were putting out on social media, because people could access that, criminals can access that. And the more information they can get about you, the more they can target their scam directly at you so that you think it is legitimate. So be very careful about what you are posting. Also limit the contact information you share online. In that case, I had mentioned maybe the grandchild has posted their phone number online. Well, now the criminal has that information. Watch out for fake profiles and don't accept friend requests from people you don't know. So people could create a fake profile. Ever get a friend request from someone and you're looking at it going, I thought I was friends with them already. Be suspicious if that happens. Go and check. Are you friends with them already? And reach out to them to like, did you create this new account or not? Because it could be that someone is trying to pretend to be them in order to then do some other kind of scam against you or any other of their friends. And of course, if it's someone you don't know, why are they reaching out to be your friend? Regularly review your privacy settings. Make sure that whatever you are posting is scoped so that only the people you want to see it are actually the ones who do see it. Now, at the same time, I'm going to suggest that you don't believe that the privacy settings are working. Assume that any information that you put out there, someone else could have access to. So if someone calls and they happen to know something that you've posted on social media and you think, well, the only people who would know that are my friends, don't believe that. Assume that a criminal could also get access to that same information. It could be, for example, that they've compromised a friend's account of yours and then they are able to see it. You don't know what might be happening. And always remember, unsolicited messages could be social engineering attempts. Even if it's a friend. If it's a friend reaching out and they're saying, hey, I'm going to be in town next week on Friday. How about we go out for dinner? Great. That's one thing. But if it's a friend reaching out and they're asking for financial information or personal information, it seems a bit odd. Don't trust it. Maybe, as I say, that friend's account has been compromised. If you're worried that it is legitimate, reach out to them through some other means. Give them a call. You don't have to actually respond through that same medium. And that way you can confirm it really is your friend that you were talking with. So in order to stay safe, in addition to the social media tips, and as I was just mentioning with the social media tips, be very careful about what you're putting online and monitor your privacy settings to try to keep it so that people don't see it. One of the things I've mentioned in a lot of the examples, and I'm going to harp on again, is verify. Anything that is unsolicited contact, if it's an unsolicited phone call, email, text message, verify through some other means if you think it might be legitimate. So go to the website, contact the person through their personal phone number, whatever it is, find some other way to verify that this is actually legitimate before responding. And never share information with people you don't know, especially if they contacted you first. Again, if something is unsolicited, be suspicious of it. And really resist the pressure to act quickly. Again, that's one of the techniques that criminals use. They try to get you to react really quickly without thinking. And you really need to take that into consideration whenever you see anything, if someone's really pressuring you. Trust your instincts. I'd mentioned this earlier. If something seems fishy, it probably is. If your spidey sense tingles for whatever reason, trust it. It's trying to tell you something. And so listen to what your spidey sense is saying. And remember, if an offer looks too good to be true, it probably is. And so again, don't trust it. And if you want to confirm it's actually not a scam and that it is legitimate, there are other ways to go through other means to verify the information. Remember, anyone can become a victim of a scam. Criminals don't care about you at all. I mean, I don't know how else to word it. It sounds kind of cruel, but they don't. They don't care if you're married or single. They don't care if you're young or old. They don't care if you're rich or poor even. They just want to get your money. And the reason is this is their full-time job. That's what a criminal does. They're a criminal. It's their job to get your money. That's how they pay themselves. And so anyone can be a victim. They will go after anyone. If they think they found a vulnerability, they will use it. Know that criminals can use your personal information to build a fake identity. So it's not just that you need to be careful with, for example, your credit card number. You need to be careful about anything about you that could then be used to create a fake identity. Someone could steal your identity to try to do one of the more common ones is if someone can get your social security number and information like that, they can put in to get credit cards. Run up a debt on the credit cards, never pay them, but the credit card agencies and the credit agencies think it was actually you. So be careful about what you put out there, even just for personal information. very importantly, report to local law enforcement and contact your bank if you have been the victim of a scam. Let the bank know, because if you're a victim of a scam, hopefully the bank will be able to help you. But on top of that, make sure law enforcement knows as well. I'm going to give you a couple of different websites you can go to. One is reportfraud.ftc.gov. And I'm going to say that again, reportfraud.ftc.gov is one place you can go to report that you've been the victim of a scam. The other place to go is the FBI. The FBI has set up a special website that specifically deals with internet crime, and that is ic3.gov. Again, ic3.gov. Please report to law enforcement if you have been a victim. So I have covered a lot of information in this presentation. I've given you a lot of different statistics. I have given you a lot of examples of different scams. What I'm hoping that you take away is the knowledge based on all of those different scams to know that this is how a scam might work against me. And here's the different ways that techniques that criminals use. And here's how I can protect myself. And with that, I am going to turn it back over to Gerald.
An amazing presentation. And I think that one of the most powerful things you gave in this presentation was how many different vehicles can be used to scam you.
Yeah, it's going to continue. There will be more. And so, again, if it's unsolicited, verify.
Okay. Dr. Gates, thank you again for a wonderful program.
This has been
a program of Commonwealth Club of California. And we look forward to seeing you at all of our future programs. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this Commonwealth Club radio show featuring Kerry Gates in conversation with Gerald Harris. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club, now celebrating our 120th year. Join us again next week for another timely program. Until then, you can learn more about us and our events at commonwealthclub.org. Find thousands of our programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. When you're in the Bay Area, please join us in person at the Commonwealth Club of California.
Sebastopol.
It's Dave Koz, and thanks for making the Dave Koz Radio Show part of your weekend. Great to be with you, as always. Joining me on the show is one of the great guitarists out there, though he's probably best known for his work as a producer. He's responsible for some of the biggest hits from artists like Boney James, Jesse J, Norman Brown, Peter White, Rick Braun, yours truly, just about all of them. Listen, this guy's got the magic touch. Stick around to hang out with Paul Brown when he joins me right here in our studios. Another Paul, Paul Hardcastle, shares a little bet you didn't know fact, and Kenny G has an oops moment to put a smile on your face, guaranteed. There's also 2 hours of music on the way from Gerald Albright, Stevie Wonder, Richard Elliott, Anita Baker, the group Pieces of a Dream. It'll help make whatever you're doing this weekend go a lot smoother, I promise. So thanks so much for making the Dave Koz Radio Show part of your weekend. You can find us online anytime at DaveKoz.com or Facebook and Twitter at Dave Koz Music. Great saxophonist by the name of Huge Groove is going to kick things off now. Here's Got to Be Groovin'.